talks, I talk, but I don't know how to redeem those things I've said and all the things I've done. He's seen, he knows. I wish things could be back the way they were. His sacrifice always my gain, I never return. And I'm just like a kite drinking a beer. The sun will shine as bright when he's not here, and I'll never let anything get into my head or bother me. Maybe he'll go that much I know, but I won't show my tears of can hear. And then he walks out, my mind gives chase, but my feet don't move, they hold me in place. So I'll just fly a kite and I'll drink a beer. The sun will shine as bright when he's not here, and I'll never I know, but I still won't show my tears of pillars of salt and divorced by default. And our city is burning. I'm crushed under walls of my own design. It's so asinine, but of course I play like I'm fine. And I'm just flying.
The song is called Woe and is from the latest CD by Canadian artist Kevin Wong. The album is called The Pink and the Gray, and this show is called Out Radio. I'm J.D. Doyle, and I love to share the music from new releases by GLBT artists. I've got two interviews on this segment to do just that. The second one is with Avi Wisnia to talk about his latest CD called Something New, so I hope you stick around for that. But first, I want to dig right into Kevin Wong's album, and I started with the basic question, asking him to tell me about it.
The Pink and the Gray is my second independent release. It's entirely self-written, except for one song, which is a Billy Joel cover, entirely self-produced for the first time. And I feel like it's the first musical work that really speaks to what I'm about musically, as well as what my experiences have been with gay dating, love, and loss.
How do you describe your music?
I think it's ultimately pop, but it tends to be pop crossed in with a lot of other older influences. I'm really heavily influenced by Billy Joel and Donny Hathaway, Stevie Wonder, and Elton John, and I think those four main influences, as well as other smatterings of kind of contemporary pop, make their way into my music, so they kind of inform it from, you know, a rock standpoint or a soul standpoint or an R&B standpoint. I think lyrically it's pretty frank, sometimes a little bit flippant, but generally I try to be a little bit honest and exposed with it.
And tell me about the album itself overall.
The album is, well, it's first an exploration into my own experience with self-production, because before with other projects, I found that when I worked with other producers, they didn't always share my vision musically in particular. So I thought I would give it a go this time, and I think because of that, it's the most reflective of what I want to create and how I actually sound when you hear me live. The album ends up sequenced from beginning to end in kind of a bit of a retrospective at the beginning about a bunch of lost relationships, and then as I go through it, I kind of come to terms with the loss of that relationship, and then I end up in something new by the end, and it kind of ends with looking forward with hope.
What song from the CD seems to be getting the most audience reaction?
There's about three, I think. Falling Balloons immediately seemed to get a lot of reaction just from people, probably because it's one of the simplest, catchiest songs that I've written. Out of Reach has gotten a fair bit of reaction from radio promoters and people who look for kind of marketable pop rock. And then Shine, the last track, is one of the most popular songs. And for whatever reason, it's my number one downloaded song on iTunes now. So.
Any theories on that?
I'm not really sure. Maybe people like the fact that it has conclusion as a subtitle. I figured they would just skip to the end, like the end of a book. But, or just the snippets on iTunes are the catchy part of the song, I suppose.
Yeah, that must be a challenge on these music sites to pick 30 seconds and grab people.
Mm-hmm. With some of them, because they work through kind of the independent distributor, you don't really get to pick your 30 seconds either. Amazon, iTunes, I didn't really get the chance to pick. They kind of just jump into about a minute into the song and assume they'll hit the chorus if there is one. But I kind of just crossed my fingers and hoped that it wouldn't be a very, you know, kind of bizarre part of the song.
I've played clips online where they never got to the vocals.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I believe Falling Balloons is the first single?
It is.
How did you choose that for the first one?
I kind of sent various songs out to a kind of cross-section, I suppose, you know, my version of a focus group, and for whatever reason that was the one that was most positively met with, maybe because it's a mid-tempo, so it goes down easy, it's catchy enough, and... I don't know, I think maybe people, everybody seemed to respond to that one the most strong, so I went with that.
Yeah. Could chase you forever and wander together, and even then still know I've lost. My beautiful lover keeps both eyes on others and never thinks about the cost. And still the earth goes round, but I can't seem to move. And then we hit the ground, and we hit it too soon. We went soaring up in the light, without a care to colors apply. But when the air went out of you, what else was left for me to do but sink back down to and starting, you're always departing, returning only at your will. No joy and no laughter, just one big disaster, and without you I drown within. And don't you tell me I've got to rise up again. Each time I reach the clouds, well it's thunder. Through the night, falling blue.
move and then we hit the ground, and it's always too soon.
And that was Kevin Wong's song, Falling Balloons, from his new CD, The Pink in the Gray. And I wanted to hear about the title of the album.
The title of the album, The Pink in the Gray, is ultimately about the juxtaposition of, queer into the straight, because, you know, for the most part, the music industry is, you know, quite heteronormative and quite heterosexual in nature. So the pink is a symbol for that. It's also a symbol for music in my life in general, because this album kind of came out of me really, really needing to go back into music again because I needed more of an outlet. So it was the pink and the kind of gray of that. And it's also kind of about my boyfriend in that he kind of keeps my life more interesting, I would say. He constantly challenges me and moves me forward.
Is this the first recording where you've had lyrically gay material?
It's not, although I think it's probably the first recording where it's been so in your face that nobody could ambiguously or heteronormatively interpret it in a different way. On my first album, there was a gay love duet between me and the guy I actually was in love with at the time. But somehow people managed to gloss over it and assume that it was two guys together singing about their respective women. So in many ways, I guess it is the first time it's been frankly about gay love.
And did you get any resistance from anyone about wanting to do it this way? Did people advise you against gay material, for example?
Surprisingly, no, actually. Partly maybe because it was self-produced, but the people I worked with externally, fellow musicians, people who I sent working tracks to for feedback, my mastering engineer, and even live promoters, for the most part, have been really, really good. Surprisingly, I've been invited to play Caravana in Toronto, and even they haven't said anything other than just be who you are. Everyone's been very supportive, and in fact, my parents have kind of come to the place where they think it might even be more of a carving out of a niche because of all the growing preponderance of openly out gay artists now.
I think it's a sign of changing times.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think 10 years ago Adam Lambert probably could have existed with the sales that he has now.
No, certainly not. I have an artist friend who had his debut album, 15 years ago, and he put a song on it that was very, very queer. And it says, "I'm here, I'm queer, get used to it," in the lyrics. And
oh, yeah.
He said he did that on that album to get that issue out of the way.
I mean, I think with mine, I didn't want to shy away from it because, you know, for one thing, I didn't know if someone younger or someone, even not necessarily younger, but someone who was not at the same stage of actualization or, you know, facing up with their sexuality might benefit from me talking openly. And also, it's kind of impossible for me to write from personal experience and then change all the lyrics into a she, because then it doesn't feel honest when I sing it. Right? So I don't think there was really any other way to write at this point.
Here's a bit of another out song from the CD called Out of Reach.
Nikki goes over the
I take a breath and follow suit. I race along behind and pray. If only he'd reciprocate. Maybe I've taken the wrong approach. But oh, it's too late now to tell me so.
One that struck me was Legion of the Broken. Could you talk about that one?
Legion of the Broken was written probably during my most bitter period. I had just gone through two kind of consecutive relationships that weren't really relationships that had ended quite badly. One of whom I'd been in love with for about 3 to 4 years, and then the second one, I almost ended up becoming the third man in a situation like that. And so I had a kind of bitter retrospective on the entire community as a whole at the time. And so Legion of the Broken kind of came out of that, where I kind of asked myself, I wonder if monogamy is even possible. And, you know, you get into the age-old debate as to whether or not it should be, and, you know, whether it's right, or whether you're just falling into certain normative conventions. And so the song is kind of written from the perspective of someone who is flippantly but bitterly looking back on the fact that they've been cheated on, and yet they can't seem to quite let go. And that's kind of where the song came out of.
Baby's gonna leave again in another midnight. Another broken game of chance, though I never planned it. It's like you're saying that's the point, to disappoint me. If that's the point, he's made it well, as far as I see. So I wear a mask of endless laughter, you laugh but never cry. Though inside I think I'm breaking faster, break as I wonder why. Same old story, boy loves boy, but trifles with a third as well. You know this tale, yeah, love's no glory when you treat it like a prison cell. So I joined the Legion of the Broken, live it to disillusionment. And I swear I'll try to stop the hoping and live in present tense. Baby thinks he's got me fooled with all his sweet deceptions. Yet protest when I'm making use precautionary protection. It's like he's saying that's the rub, our love's a dirty bathtub. He scrubs another that succumbs, and I learned my lesson.
and the mask of endless night is crumbling. It crumbles fast enough, and I feel like I somehow deserve things, because I won't walk out. Same old story, boy loves boy, but travels with the third as well. You know this tale, yeah, love's no glory when you treat it like an acid well. So I joined the legion of the broken, the bitter disillusioned men. And I swear I'll try to stop my hoping and live in present tense. Oh, 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 oh. Disillusioned man, and I swear I'll try to stop the hoping. That's my one defense.
Are there any other songs on the album that have really interesting stories that you'd want to talk about?
Let me think. Well, there's Mr. Secrets, which is not intended to be a blasting of every closet case in the world. It was really more my response to one person who I met in my second year of law school, who I'll admit I had quite a bit of a crush on and had a dalliance with. And it turned out that this person, in addition to being a closet case, despite knowing full well that he was gay since the age of 13, was a pathological liar and may or may not have had a tendency to spit out lies for no good reason, even when they didn't do him any benefit. So that song was written about him, although I actually wrote the song and then hid it for 2 years because we were still friends for quite a while, and it was only when we finally had our final falling out that I brought Mr. Secrets back out and produced it and added it to this album, although I doubt that he'll ever hear it.
Mr. Secrets walks and he sets out his bait now. A tight black shirt and all the boys and girls come round. So handsome, all desirable in how they fall out. They line up in a row so he can knock them down. And tell me, does he ever wonder what it's like to not pretend he's someone else for just a time? For when the game is over, only love is bright. He wears the safety of an easy lie. The truth comes out the more he tries to hide. He never shares a thing that's real unless he's sure that it can't come back to get him, knock illusions flat. It must be so exhausting, always overthinking. But Mr. Secret keeps right on with me complicit. But tell me, do you?
It's the secrets, do you know what they won't tell you? They all suspect, they all discuss your vaunted truths. But I won't tell them that you think you've got them schooled. But when they're gone, you're left with no one but the fool.
Could you talk about the song Denial?
Oh, yeah. Denial was written about my first year in law school. I had finished the first album, and instead of promoting it, I kind of just went straight into law school, and I kind of figured for a while, that's it. I'm done with music, and I will now be a professional and a grown-up. And it obviously didn't really work out. But I found when I got into law school that instead of being this kind of higher and learning school of higher thought, it turned out to be this collection of young, very immature individuals who were constantly competing and comparing and pretending to be people who they really weren't. And so the first verse is written about them. It seems like I'm surrounded by, you know, 100 people wearing business suits and playing games, because that was what it really felt like at the time. And then the second verse was written about someone similar to the people I met in law school, who a good friend of mine was dating at the time. And I don't think he knows that, and I hope he doesn't, because I like him now. I think at the time he was just trying way too hard. And that was how I got from the second verse into the third verse, where I realized that a lot of the traits that I hate about superficiality in other people are really traits I don't like in myself.
It seems like each day I meet another new person who has nothing of importance to say. He prattles on and on about the painfully obvious while I fantasize about getting laid. It seems like I'm surrounded by 100 people wearing business suits but playing games. And all they seem to do is chatter about things that don't matter, though they don't even know how to face themselves. Oh, do they know themselves? Who they really are? Do they know themselves? We're all swimming in Egyptian river. If you think too long, you start to shiver. But reality is soon delivered, and the house of lies all falls down. Thinking that we're so damn clever, social rejects telling all the weather. And someone always pulls the lever to make the house of lies all fall down. The house of lies all fall down. Reminds me of a penguin when he waddles in, half drunk and high and desperate to unzip his skin. And he's talking at 100 words a second wind, and I start to wince because he's just like me within. And I seem to be surrounded by 100 hearts, still going loud and strong but missing fundamental parts. And all the money and the porn can occupy our time, and yet it's apathy that ends up as the party line. And yet, oh, do we know ourselves? We're capable of, do we know ourselves? We're all swimming in Egyptian river. If you think too long, you start to shiver. But reality
myself who I really am? Do I know myself?
Again, that was the song Denial, and the album The Pink and the Gray is by Kevin Wong. And you can find out more about him at kevinwongmusic.com.
I'm throwing ninja stars at the wall just to see what sticks. Oh, just to get my kicks and roll away. I tear around at the seams just to tune it out. Just to forget about it, just roll away. And now there's something coming over me, 'cause you're more than me. I gotta keep distractions under me. I can clearly see the signs from here, but you make them hard to read. Whoa, 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 whoa. Staring off at the wall.
The song is called More Than Me, and the artist is Avi Wisnia, and that's spelled A-V-I-W-I-S-N-I-A, and his latest CD is one I've been waiting for. I got to hear a preview copy of it last fall, and I've been more than ready for it. It's called Something New, and I tracked him down to tell me about the album.
The new album is called Something New, and I think it really represents not only something new for me, being that this is my debut album and the first time I'm really putting my songs out there with all the arrangements and the orchestration that I had in mind, but I also think it represents something new, you know, for people that are into singer-songwriters and used to that genre. I think it presents something a little unexpected. I think each track on this album is something different than the last, and gives you something expected even as you're listening through the song. And it also fuses a lot of different genres, from jazz to pop to bossa nova to folk to Americana. So it really represents something new in a lot of ways.
How would you describe your musical style?
That is certainly a difficult question for any artist. And I've tried to hone it down over the years, and I think I've settled on defining it as Ben Folds meets Norah Jones if they had a love child in Brazil. And I think that really, you know, my music does cover a lot of genres, hop around from pop to folk to jazz to Americana to bossa nova. And I certainly like to incorporate all those things and fuse them in, not only from song to song, but in a lot of songs, I'll also fuse those genres together.
I noticed Amazon has your EP listed under folk music and your CD under jazz.
Yeah. And that also, you know, that also speaks to the different production styles that we also did, because on the EP, there are some of those songs, some of my oldest songs that are also on the album. But the EP we actually recorded in the synagogue of my father, who is a rabbi. And, you know, being that he's a rabbi, we had some connections to the space in the synagogue and this large sanctuary with great acoustics and a great piano. So we went in there and we really recorded on the fly. We did 7 tracks in 2 days and with just a stripped-down trio. And so you really capture that live feel, and it does kind of feel more folky and acoustic. But with this new album, my debut album, Something New, I really wanted to take advantage of getting into a studio and being able to to realize these larger arrangements, and really being able to utilize the tools of a studio and these wonderful musicians that I was able to work with. And so what you hear is just a fuller version of some of these songs, as well as some experimenting with some new songs that you wouldn't be able to do really in a live setting or in one take.
What song from your album gets the most audience reaction?
I can safely say that I think the song that takes the audience by surprise the most, and I love watching this reaction when I play it, is definitely my cover of TLC's No Scrubs. And I think, you know, it's so funny to watch people, you know, the reaction on their faces, and then they start, you know, they get it, they realize what it is, and then they realize, you know, that I've kind of turned it on its head and I'm doing this jazz version, and then they start singing along, and it's incredible to see. I really, you know, I've played the song for audiences of like all different demographics, and that's been really great to see. When you get a reaction when you are doing something unexpected for the audience that really takes them by surprise, I mean, that's the best for me. That's my goal, to give the audience something that they're not expecting, and something entertaining, and something that they can really enjoy.
Well, you really made that a gay song.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, for people that know me and know that I'm out, it makes sense. And for people that don't know me, you know, that can get it or think it's tongue-in-cheek, I think it's part of being unexpected. I think we can all relate to, you know, the idea that there are some, you know, some guys trying to holler at us that we're just not, you know, just not right for us, or won't leave us alone, or, you know, are just kind of beneath our standards. I think everybody can relate to that for sure.
And this is the song that really got my attention when I first heard the album last year, and I just love it. Avi Wisnia and No Scrubs.
Scrub is a guy who thinks he is fly, but also known as a buster. He always talking about what he wants and just sits on his broke-ass. No, I don't want your number. I don't want to give you mine. And no, I don't want to meet you nowhere. I don't want none of your time. I don't want no scrub. A scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging out the passenger side of his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me. I don't want no scrub. Scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging out the passenger side of his best friend's ride. There's a scrub checking me, but his game is kinda weak, and I know that he cannot approach me,
'cause I'm looking like class. He's looking like trash. I don't wanna get with this deadbeat ass. No, I don't want your number. I don't wanna give you mine. And no, I don't wanna meet you nowhere. I don't want none of your time. Side of his best friend's ride, trying to holler at me. I don't want no scrub. A scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging at the passenger side of his best friend's ride.
Here we go. Talking to you if you're living at home with your mama. Oh yeah, son, I'm talking to you. I say if you've got a shorty that you don't show love. Oh yeah, son, and I'm talking to you. You wanna get with me with no money? Oh no, 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 I don't want no scrub. Scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging out the passenger side of this
Do you consider yourself a jazz artist?
You know, I certainly there are certainly people out there who could run me out of the room with the chop that they have. I certainly am a jazz appreciator, and you know, I've listened to artists like Stan Getz and Chet Baker, and they've definitely influenced my writing. But I wouldn't say I'm primarily a jazz artist at all. I think my focus in writing a song is not to limit myself by genre, but I'm certainly interested in the song craft and the kind of storytelling that comes across in a lot of folk music and pop music. But I love the improvisation freedom that jazz allows for. So I think you definitely hear that in a lot of the songs too, that jazz color.
I wonder if you have an opinion on this question. There do not seem to be many singers in the jazz genre who are openly gay, and why would you think that is so?
That is an interesting question. I think, you know, you come across it maybe more so in the lounge and cabaret world. You know, it certainly is across the board hard to find. You know, you're hard pressed to find openly gay artists in general. And, you know, I think it's interesting when you talk about jazz vocalists, because a lot of the jazz standards are very, shall I say, heterocentric. You know, they're love songs that talk about a person of the opposite sex quite blatantly. So if you're going to change that song, I mean, you're going to be changing a classic that everybody knows, and you know, you're sort of putting yourself out there on a pedestal more, which I guess, you know, for as outspoken as some artists are, some are really hesitant to do that. There's no reason that any song can't be rewritten, and there's no reason that anybody can't be open about who they are making the music that they love.
Oh, yes. Talk about the song New Year.
New Year is one of the songs that means the most to me, and every time I sing it kind of takes me back to the place, you know, the time when I was writing it. I got this idea around the time of, you know, January 1st, that it's funny, we always make these New Year's resolutions that we're going to change starting January 1st, but, you know, it's kind of arbitrary. It could be any day. Any day could be your new year to start things new and to have a fresh start and to really see things in a new light.
If someone just reads the title, New Year, they might think, oh, this is a holiday song, but really it's not New Year, it's New Beginning.
Right, right. And I think it's very appropriate as a New Year's song, I guess, because it is, you know, it is about new beginnings and, you know, things can always get better and we can always change either our perspective or our situation, you know, at any time.
They found him with his open hands. He was learning to let go. He had enough but was not full. He found it hard to swallow. Never say what really is on your mind. It's really not the time and place. Never face the world with an open hand. But this is new, yeah. This is new, yeah. This is new. This is new.
His feet were taken to the
Please tell me about the song, I Wish I Could Stop Writing Songs About You.
Yes, the song with the longest title. That song, you know, that song is a breakup song that I tried desperately not to write. You know, I had gone through a very rough breakup with a boyfriend of mine that we had been dating for a long time. And, you know, I found myself, after we had ended the relationship, just really, at first, unable to write anything. Just kind of so torn up about everything, and I couldn't even make any music. And then when I finally got to the phase where I was, you know, able to sit down at the piano and start writing things again, I found that I wasn't able to stop. And that everything I wrote, every song happened to be about him and the relationship, you know, and I got tired of it after a while. I was like, you know, I got to come up with something else. And one day I sat down and this song just kind of came out. This is a song about trying not to write a song, you know, about the breakup. And I just kind of ran with it. And it's nice that a lot of people come up to me after my shows and say that this is a song that resonates for them the most.
I'm sitting down now, putting pen to paper, just trying to think of something else to say. But instead of words come pictures, like stills from a movie or a rerun of an episode I'm trying to erase. So I jot it down, kinda sketch it out, and it looks like the present I once knew. Wonder where my days have gone as it's turning towards the dawn. I know it's time to move along, but it's dark. After all is said and done, I still end where I began. Yeah, I wish that I could stop writing songs about it. Still to say, there's war and inaction and disaffection and ignorance and hatred and injustice to name away. See, I've tried it all, tried to switch my mind's track, but it seems that all I got is only one. Wonder where my days have gone as it's turning towards the dawn. I know it's time to move along, but it's hard. After all is said and done, I still end where I've been. I could stop writing songs about you.
We've been talking with Avi Wisnia about his new CD, Something New, and you can find out more about him at aviwisnia.com. And I've been saving this next song by him to close the segment because I just love it. And do yourself a favor and watch the video for it. It is so, so clever. The song is called Rabbit Hole, and I just had to hear about it.
Rabbit Hole was one of those songs that, you know, some songs you really have to work at them. You have to sit down and figure it out, and there are parts that get you stuck, you know, for days or months or years. This song just kind of came to me one night to the point where I couldn't fall asleep because I kept jumping out of bed and writing the next line and writing the next verse, and it just kind of wrote itself. And I loved the idea of writing a song from the perspective of being stuck in this in a relationship and sort of trying to get out, and the metaphor of being stuck in this kind of small enclosed space, you know, with the person that you love, and you kind of can't stand them, but you also don't want to leave them. You don't want to leave the comfort of your little rabbit hole. And I really kind of ran with that metaphor in the song.
I love your video for that song. It is so, so clever.
Thank you. That was, the video was a great collaboration between me and some good friends of mine. My friends who directed the video, Seth Kroll and Alan Cohen, and just had a really great time with the shoot. And then, of course, they did their little green screen magic, which was a lot of fun. It was certainly a lot of fun to make, so I hope that comes across when people watch it.
Someday this will be funny. We'll look back and laugh how we humped just like bunnies. Now look at the problems we have. Yes, we dug ourselves silly as we made our way through. Well, it looks like I'm stuck in this rabbit hole with you. How did we end up here? I thought we were fine. Turns out you've got some issues and you can't deal with mine. See, I hate the words you feed me. You hate how loud I chew. Well, it looks like I'm stuck in this rabbit hole with you. Bring it on. Same way, but underground dwellings aren't selling well these days. Yes, we dug ourselves silly with mud on each shoe, so it looks like I'm stuck in this rabbit hole with you. In this rabbit hole. It's a good thing we're in here. It's starting to pour. And I'll show you my worries if you show me yours. Yes, we're in these close quarters, but somehow we'll make do. Well, it looks like I'm stuck in this rabbit hole with you. So where do you think I'm going? I'll give you one clue. I'm going to bring the rest of my things back to this rabbit.